I love her. I love her very much. I've never had a feeling like
shut
this.
Shut up.
And speaking of love, weren't you and I going to talk about that today?
Yes, we were.
But, well, couldn't you manage to arrange your time so you could have a little fun, too?
Everyone, welcome to VomCom, the podcast about the romantic comedies you love to hate.
And hate to love. We'd like to acknowledge that the recording of this podcast takes place both in the region of Peel, which is part of the treaty lands and territory of the Mississaugas of the Credit.
And Ottawa, which was built on unceded Anishinaabe Algonquin Nation territory. Kat, how y'all doing?
I'm okay. I'm good. Actually, I'm good. I don't know why I sold myself short. I'm good.
Yeah, it was kind of ominous when you went, I'm okay. Or am I?
Yeah, we've been talking like for an hour, and then for me to just all of a sudden drop in, okay.
Yeah. As if we weren't just blue. Having like a nice little medley of existential dread before we started recording, and now we're just like, hi everyone, welcome back to our channel. Don't forget to like and subscribe.
Let's talk about love and kissing.
Yay! We're back again to talk about love and kissing. Mooching and jokes. Oh, guys, we were on the most recent episode of Layered Butter, the podcast. Which was great. Very fun. I didn't plan anything to say after that. I just went, brain, good.
I don't know why I just shrugged in agreement instead of audibly agreeing.
Yeah.
What's wrong with me?
It was Rodrigo and Jordan who asked us some nice little questions, and we talked about smooching and jokes more on their podcast.
We have to seep into other people's podcasts. So, hi guys, if you're listening, thank you for having us. We had a great time.
Thank you for having us in your house. Full disclosure, I had a full-blown mental breakdown right before we got on this call, and there was literally no good reason for it, but I'm finding it very therapeutic to not pretend like I have my shit together all the time anymore, so we're just putting it out there. It was so stupid. It was so stupid. I had a total mental breakdown over just sensory overload. Which, literally, this is the strength. This might come off as a bit jarring because we haven't talked about this at all ever on this podcast, but there was a time where I wondered if I was registering anywhere on the autism spectrum because of how severely I react to some bad sensory input. And now maybe that might have been an overreaction, but I don't know. I don't know. I don't know anything. I'm just a dumb little baby. So here we are on our podcast. Guys, thanks for listening.
Guys, thanks so much for tuning in. I'm a dumb little baby.
Drink.
What are you drinking? Whiskey straight?
No. Oh, no. This is actual
Whoa.
Champagne.
Whoa. I didn't know I was talking to fucking Emily
it's
and
called
Paris.
Trois Rosé. Mm-hmm. You are. And I don't know how to speak Francais. I just came from America. This is a shout out to Emma for this champagne. Girl, I know we were supposed to drink it together, but it's been a rough day and I just had to pop it. I was thinking of you. Peace sign.
What's the best?
Guys, today we're talking about Miss Congeniality.
The movie.
The movie.
The movement. I'm going to start off controversially by saying, I think by our own standards, this is not a rom-com.
Gasp. How could you say this? Oh, because the romance doesn't drive the plot.
I know.
Oh my God. I can't believe we got this far without analyzing it.
When
in
we
that
were
way.
Like, I mean, wow. I will break the rule for Sandra Bullock all the time, forever, for anything. So I'm fine talking about this film because it has both elements, but by our own definition, it's not actually a rom-com. So, speaking of us being on Layered Butter, they had asked us something about what is a rom-com. Did they ask us that? Or we just went into mansplaining it to them?
They were asking us about our parameters for choosing movies and how we decide whether or not something falls into rom-com category or not.
Yeah, and our legit answer was, well, as long as the romance drives the story. And in this case...
Look, we never said we were role models, okay? Fucking hypocrites.
Immediately after
we are
our guest spot, we're just like, we're not doing that. But again, it's fine.
Well,
because
welcome to our podcast where we do whatever we want because it's our podcast and not yours.
But
I stole that from Trixie and Katya.
I think it's perfectly fine because I think more people need to talk about this movie and be honest about its
for many reasons.
Its importance in our culture and history as humans.
Speaking of history, who wants a little cultural context for this movie and the year 2000 when this movie came out?
Amazing. The segues are driving themselves.
Wow, guys, calm down. Stop screaming for me to talk about it. I'll do it, okay? Relax.
Chill out.
Okay, so Miss Congeniality came out in the year 2000, okay? At this point, I would say that Sandra Bullock had established her name within the romantic comedy and romantic drama, so rom-drom, genres. I made a little list here. What? Is that not a thing people say?
No, it is a thing. I just like the way that you went. Rom-drom? Like, so suggestive. Like, selling me on the point. As if I wouldn't agree.
Like, my eyebrows went way up. Okay. So, the movies she had come out with already that were very notable within the romantic genre and subgenres were Practical Magic, Hope Floats.
Oh, my God.
While You Were Sleeping, Forces of Nature, and of course, Speed with Keanu Reeves.
I've never seen Speed. Sorry. Yeah.
Really? Yeah. You should watch it with your man because I think you would both enjoy it.
Yeah, okay. Noted. Sorry, I interrupted you saying something. What were you saying?
Yeah, no, all good. I'm used to being interrupted. It's fine. My brain does it to my own self all the time. So so even though she was already established, I do want to note that in 2000, when Miss Congeniality came out, this was one of her highest grossing box office films at that time of her entire career. So it was a big deal, even though she had already made a name for herself. And, you know, she had a few comedic roles before, but this one was her kind of her breakout in terms of being a comedy lead, I think. Because even though you think of it as a very seminal piece and you kind of think to yourself, okay, it came out in 2000. If you look at her filmography before then, there weren't that many romantic comedies that she was in that were big box office successes.
Yeah.
So there are a few other big names in this movie. We've got Michael Caine, Sir Michael Caine.
Michael Caine.
Of course, got Candace Bergen. Mike Cocaine. Candace Bergen, who aka the wasp mom in every movie, and we have William Shatner, and so big names. Billy. You know, this was there was some heavy.
I was gonna say Billy Shatz.
Oh wow, you are the best. You are very good at names. You should do stand up.
Oh my god, thank you. Can you imagine my stand up routine is just me going on stage? Tell me your name. William Shatner? Billy Shatz. Next. Tell me your name.
Next. Keep it moving. I would go to that show.
Thanks. Okay. Sorry.
I feel like that's a good chaotic energy because it wouldn't just be that. It would branch out into something else, I'm sure. You know, you warm up the audience with that.
Yeah.
And then you hit him with the poop jokes.
Thank you for having faith in my whole routine. Please go on.
Yeah. Okay, yes, right. So a few other things that I wanted to mention regarding cultural context was, one, body shaming in Hollywood.
Ugh.
Okay? You cannot watch this movie and not have it stick out like a sore thumb that they are very black and white about what bodies are desirable and which ones are not. Mm-hmm. And it's very like symptomatic of the time. Mm-hmm. I don't think that this would fly now. It just wouldn't. It would stick out like a sore thumb. Did I already say the stick out like a sore thumb analogy like really recently?
I don't know.
So
I keep repeating Billy Shatz in my head, so I'm sorry.
You just got it on loop. Oh, the struggle.
Okay.
Yeah, I get it, girl. Don't worry. What I wanted to talk about, aside from the fact that this was like super commonplace, was that you would hear a lot of polarizing binary language around body image, I guess. So you would hear, like, this is the era of people saying things like man shoulders and thunder thighs and, you know, those words were thrown around willy-nilly. No one thought anything of it. It was just part of, like, that diet culture, that heroin chic early 2000s culture. And the question, does this make my butt look big, was, you know, asked unironically at this time, if that gives you an idea of the context.
Yeah.
This was also the era of the absolute villainy of Tyra Banks on America's Next Top Model, which if there's ever a case study for the way that women talked about their and other people's bodies in that era, just go watch season one of America's Next Top Model. It's absolutely horrendous. But yeah, there was just no critical discourse about body shaming.
Yeah.
At this time. It was just part of culture. It was widely accepted. So for it to be written into the script of this movie so blatantly and without, like, any kind of, like, apology, you know, it's not non-apologetic, it's blatant. There's a lot of jokes where the butt of the joke is, oh, this person has, like, a masculine haircut.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. So that was just something that I think was of the moment but is no longer kind of acceptable. But it's important to look at in terms of the context. So the next point I want to talk about in terms of the cultural context is Miss USA.
Yes.
So Miss USA is the real life counterpart of Miss Congeniality's, the pageant that is at the core of Miss Congeniality, which is called the Miss United States.
Mm-hmm.
She's Beauty and she's Grace. She's Miss United States.
Yep.
What I wanted to point out, I kind of talked about like a hit that it took with the body shaming. One of the things that I think this movie did well was racial diversity,
mm-hmm.
Within the pageant contestants. So even within the small core group of pageant contestants, you see there's two black girls, first of yeah. all, in a group of six, which is yeah. like, you didn't see that. It's like they always thought, oh, one black girl, good enough, checked off that box, move on. They had two, and I was like, and it doesn't seem like a big thing, but I feel like it is a big deal.
It's a huge deal. Because the core
group of pageant contestant is three white girls, one Pacific Islander, and two black girls.
I think also to be more okay. specific, one black girl, like African-American black, and then one, I think, like Afro-Latina mm-hmm. black.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because she's speaking.
Oh, yeah, because she was speaking Spanish.
Yeah, she's speaking Spanish.
Yeah.
I think, I don't want to specifically say Puerto Rican. Sick. Or Dominican. I can't remember if they said it in the thing, but like she's an Afro-Latino.
Sick.
Yeah.
Diversity.
Exactly.
It's a little win for diversity, but I feel like it goes a long way because, anyways, I won't harp on about it. But the reason that I bring this up is because in the history of Miss USA, mm-hmm. the real life Miss USA, the very first ever African-American recipient only was crowned in 1983. Like, that's not that
was that ago. Vanessa Williams?
So that was crazy. It was Miss yes! Vanessa Williams.
I fucking love Vanessa Williams.
Yeah. Gorgeous, amazing woman. You know, she actually resigned. She gave up her crown the preceding year because there was a scandal that she was wrapped up in where Penthouse magazine published her nude photographs unauthorized. Very poor form. Very maybe is now illegal and yeah. certainly was at least frowned upon and a shitty thing to do back then. So very much against that and very much poo-poo on Penthouse. That's a really shit thing to do. They literally published them in a magazine, like hard copy. Yeah. Like, what the fuck is wrong
Can
with you?
Can you imagine?
But anyways, she didn't need that. She gave her crown away. She said, look, these bitches are below me. They're going to pull this shit like this. I'm going to go build a career.
Yeah.
And she did.
She did.
And she built a whole career, and everyone loves her. And then finally, so this happened in 1984, and she resigned, but it was very obvious that the pageant actually, like, kind of
coerced her.
Kind of pressured her to resign. Yeah. They gave her an official apology live on air in, guess what year?
1993?
More recent.
2019?
Okay, close.
Oh.
That's pretty close. It was 2015.
Ah!
That's too goddamn long. That's too goddamn long. Yeah. They should have. Very embarrassing for them. I think it's just anyways, the whole situation was a shit show. Everyone did bad except for Vanessa, and she was very poised and graceful in this situation. In this movie, they do make a flippant reference to the New Jersey contestant dropping out because the FBI literally found like a porn video of her, which that's the butt of the joke. And I thought that was a bit in poor taste considering the real life, the reality of what that does to someone. But all that to say, I did appreciate the racial diversity in this movie. And I think that we could always use more, mm-hmm. but I'll take my wins where I can get mm-hmm. them. The final point for cultural context is that this movie made $213 million
wow. at box office.
One of Sandy Bullock's most highest grossing films up to that point, except for Speed. Keanu Reeves.
Speed. Mm-hmm. Wow. For a comedy, too.
Yeah.
That's really good.
And I think it speaks to the target demographic of look who they had in the movie. They had Candace Bergen. They had this, like, they had William Shatner. They had Michael Caine. Mm-hmm. These older, like, the older generation mm-hmm. of, like, these actors that I think attracted maybe, like, that peer group, as well as the younger demographic who were going for Sandra Bullock and, you know, mm-hmm. the pageant aspect. Anyways, I think it was just the way that this movie was marketed was, I think the casting was strategic, and I think that it worked to their benefit when it came to raking in that target demographic.
Yeah. You kind of went into it, but let me read you the synopsis of this on IMDb. So, an FBI agent must go undercover in the Miss United States beauty pageant to prevent a group from bombing the event.
Bom, ba, bom, bom.
La bomba!
Na, 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 bomba.
I think what also helped... Oh, wait. Oh, I thought that the critical response was going to be really good, but now that I'm reading it, apparently it was not. Okay, so it made...
Well, it's just yet another example of the critics thinking something is trash and the general public loving it. It's like, whatever, what earns money?
Yeah.
Critical words? I don't think so.
So Wikipedia says, on Rotten Tomatoes, the film has an approval rating of 42% based on review from 115 critics. The critical consensus reads, though critics say Bullock is funny and charming, she can't overcome a bad script that makes the movie feel too much like a fluffy, unoriginal sitcom. On Metacritic, the film has a score of 43 out of 100 based on reviews from 20 critics, indicating mixed or average reviews. Audience surveyed by CinemaScore gave the film a grade A.
Grade A sounds good.
Yeah, grade A is good. No, grade A is good.
Oh, okay.
It was nominated.
See, as soon as people say the word, oh, fluffy, it's like, okay, I see. That one word tells me everything I need to know about that critic. It's that... They are ruling things out entirely based on genre, like a blanket yeah. rule. Oh, this falls into fluffy. I'm not even going to consider
yeah.
it. It's like, okay.
Do you know about the famous critic Roger Ebert?
I may have heard of him.
Okay. He was a big deal. So Roger Ebert for the Chicago Sun-Times wrote, it isn't bad so much as it lacks any ambition to be more than it so obviously is. Although he had some praise for Sandra Bullock's performance.
Wait, wait, wait. Can you say that again, but slower? Because that was a confusing sentence.
It was a confusing sentence. So this is in quote. It isn't bad so much as it lacks any ambition to be more than it so obviously is. End quote. And then it also goes on.
So this movie is an underachiever.
Yeah. And then it also goes on to say, although he had some praise for Sandra Bullock's performance. But then,
I mean, what do you want it to be? Do you want this to be like Malcolm X? What do you want?
Exactly.
Like, this is fucking...
this is...
It needs to want to be better. This movie has no aspirations. It's working at a convenience store and it's 45.
Yeah.
Grow up. It's a fucking movie.
Exactly. Okay. And then it was nominated for several awards, including 2 Golden Globes. Sandra Bullock earned a nod for best performance by an actress in a motion picture, comedy, musical... And Boston's One in a Million was nominated for Best Original Song in Motion Picture, which both are deserved. Great song. So, like, hearing this, okay, this is the 2000s, okay? We were just coming from, what, the 90s, and everything in the 90s felt like if you looked like Cher from Clueless, you had no brain in between your ears. You had not a single thought. Mm-hmm. You don't know who Hamlet is. None of those things. If you wore black and could spell Nietzsche, you had a brain. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's all the divide was. If you listened to Britney Spears, you had no brain. If you listened to Nirvana, mm-hmm. you had a soul. You know? Mm-hmm. So I feel like...
And if you listened to the Cranberries, you had depression.
So I... feel like a lot of these things, I feel like the critics' response to this is also very like the historical context needs to also be made note of, because they were just like, this is not a movie about suffering.
Yeah.
You know?
This is not Schindler's List.
This is not Schindler's List. So. I don't see people doing, like, shooting themselves up, sharing needles, and dying on the floor. So, this doesn't...
There's not enough suffering in this movie.
No, this doesn't say any big thing about anything. And it's like, you're literally talking about not judging people by the way that they look.
Mm-hmm.
And not underestimating people because they're either not attractive or too attractive.
Mm-hmm.
And then also that if you try to bomb people, you will not succeed.
Yes, this is right. I also think there's... I'm not exactly sure what the title of the message is for this particular thing that I'm trying to get at right now, but there was also something to the tune of being vulnerable later in life. Like, don't ever stop letting yourself be vulnerable, because that is a strength. Because I feel like Gracie definitely did that throughout the movie. And I'll save it for later as to why I think that was, but there's definitely, like, that kind of, like, the value of vulnerability as a strength.
Yeah.
As part of the message as well.
Exactly, because she's an FBI agent. She has had to make herself tough kind of her whole life because, okay. The movie starts off...
Are we getting into it?
Yeah. The movie starts off with her as a little girl beating up a boy in the schoolyard because he's beating on another kid who I think she kind of has a crush on, but I don't know if she had a crush on him before she came to his defense. Or just that she was a good enough kid that she saw someone being bullied and was like, hey, that's not nice. So she went to go stop it. And then instead of thanking her, the guy that she defended, the little boy that she defended, was like, ew, you're not a girl, or something along those lines. And it hurt her feelings. And then so she kicked his ass. And then ever since then, Gracie uses, like, her physical prowess to defend herself literally and from being vulnerable, because it's a survival tactic.
Mm-hmm.
And
she literally says, I am the job.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have time for friends. I don't have time for dating because I'm always working. It's like, okay, you know, that kind of
thing. Yeah, exactly. And it's like, yes, because she's had to prove herself a lot harder than I think her male coworkers have had to. So understandable where it's all coming from. But, like, at the end of the movie, where she meets these girls and then she learns that she can be kind of open and girl talk isn't just, like, like, pigtails and whatever, but it's talking about your trauma and stuff that you've never talked about before to other people.
Yeah.
Right?
She gets to experience that belonging with a group of women as a person who's only ever known, judgment.
Yeah.
Or alienation from other people. And then she gets this different type of interaction, this different kind of friendship. And you can see her kind of being, like, pleasantly surprised as these, like, very girly girls who she probably never would have associated with earlier because she was very dismissive of anything that was, you know... Fluffy pink Cher,
yeah,
Britney Spears,
yeah,
and now she's like she's giving these people a chance and they're giving her a chance. It's really, I don't know, I think that part of the movie's nice. And also, I can't believe they would say that, oh, this movie's not unique, it doesn't aim for anything. What, how many movies do you see where they have this, like, Rambo type lady character? Like, that is at the core of what makes this movie unique. From the jump, she uses her physical prowess as one of her strengths in a way that isn't catering to the male gaze. It's like, that is already unique.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, that's something I wanted to talk about too, because one of my notes, Sandra, there's something about Sandra Bullock and, like, so many of the movies that she's done, she's always there's always a scene where she's home alone. And she's, it's
eating something.
It's
sad.
Eating something sad by herself. And it's just, like, the most satisfying scene for me, especially this one, because she comes home, her apartment is a mess. and she just like doesn't care. Yeah. And it's not even aesthetic. It's all kind of like functional, which mm-hmm. I kind of appreciate, even though it's the complete opposite of how I've made my space. But it's like,
yeah,
I would love for things to just be kind of that practical sometimes, you know? So she comes in mm-hmm. and it's not performative. She's like dumping things on the floor. She's walking into her bed or tripping over covers that she's like thrown off the bed, and her hair is a mess, and she's like stabbing a microwavable dinner and then throwing it into the microwave while it's heating up. She's gonna go punch a punching bag. And it's like, I will take scenes that look like this any day over scenes like, and I still haven't seen this show, but like scenes in The Queen's Gambit where she's in a depressive episode and she's in a silk nightie.
Yeah.
Drinking.
Yeah, I've watched all of The Queen's Gambit, by the way, and I did like that show, but her, like, that particular mental breakdown scene went on for too goddamn yeah. long. It's like, why is she dancing in her panties?
Exactly.
Why?
And it's like,
this is not, like, it was just too, her makeup, her winged eyeliner is so perfect, and it's like, okay.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I just really like the scenes where it's the opposite of the male gaze, and obviously it's because it's something I crave because we don't see it that often, but I just appreciate mm-hmm. how many times it's in like Sandra Bullock movies. And
I especially appreciate this particular scene because that was a very accurate representation of me coming home earlier when she's like tripping over shit and stabbing shit and like punching things, and she's just getting so frustrated yeah. and like wants to scream. That was me 2 hours ago.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So can relate.
Very relatable. Yeah. What was my larger mm-hmm. point about that? Oh, you said something about, oh, okay. So I've watched this movie like 1,000,000,000 times. If we had just decided today to record a podcast about this movie, I wouldn't have needed to watch it because I've seen it so many times. Mm-hmm. And like as a young girl who thought that like getting ahead and trying to not be like the other girls meant being a tomboy and liking what the guys liked and disparaging mm-hmm. other girls, I was all for this movie because I was like, yeah, she's a tomboy. She doesn't care. And then at the end, she gets mm-hmm. all dolled up, and then she has, like, girlfriends, and they're crying, and I'm like, oh, that's also really nice. It's actually something that I want.
You went, oh. File that under things that make you go.
I it's interesting now seeing representations of tomboys, and I'm not saying that tomboys don't exist or like girls don't have the need to be a tomboy, but like so many representations of tomboys in media is like, no, I'm not a little girl with pigtails. Ew. You know, and they're like mm-hmm. spitting at the feet of the girls with the skirts and stuff.
Not skirts.
Frilly socks. Have you ever even looked at a baseball?
Morph. I wouldn't know about all that.
No.
Lip gloss.
Ew.
More like get lost. More like kick rocks. I don't know why this tomboy is from the 1950s. I'm sorry.
I like when you say kick rocks. It's very funny. I literally, like, when I was growing up, you know how when it would rain, there would be worms out? And all the guys...
I love where this is.
Yeah, and all the guys would pick up the worms and start chasing the girls. And I'd be
worm
like...
stories.
Yeah, I'd be like, what? They're just worms. Look, I can pick them up. And then the boys would run for me, and I'm like, I can't win.
Yeah, man. I always wonder where it started, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I look back at my internalized misogyny as, ugh. Like, a young kid or maybe a young teen, and I go, like, where did that start? Like, where did it come from? It came from a million tiny little things, but... I definitely
yeah.
always valued... I had a value system that held... quote-unquote girly things at a lower tier mm-hmm. than everything else. Not because I liked them less. I thought there was inherently less value in them. Mm-hmm. And when I started allowing myself to like those things openly and unashamedly, such as romantic comedies,
yes.
such as makeup, such as the color pink, such as
having girlfriends,
literally taking care of myself.
Yeah.
I mean, I always had more girlfriends than guy friends because boys were nasty and they still are. I honestly think boys still have cooties for the most part. Like, that's not wrong. But, I mean, it's the kind of thing that this movie highlights.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was part of the intent because you have this, spoiler, the person who done it, the person who is the evil genius behind the plan to sabotage the Miss USA contest, it's actually the director of the contest,
yeah,
played by Candace Bergen, and she is
Miss Morningside,
booby trapped the Miss Morningside. Such a freaking spooky Monopoly name. I love it. It's very Agatha Christie.
Like, yeah.
Miss Morningside. She's here to start your day off wrong. She booby traps the Miss USA crown to explode on the head of the winner. So she's the bad guy.
Yeah.
But she has this one moment where she kind of like levels with Sandra Bullock's character, whose name is Gracie Hart. And she goes to Gracie, like, I know women like you. You think that all of the things that we like, all of this, mm-hmm. the pageantry, the dresses, the makeup, the crown, the talent, all of this stuff is just fluff and it's not worth your time and it's a waste of time. But actually, you know, there's a lot of people who care about this. They care about the content and the values of poise and grace, mm-hmm. and presenting yourself and the things. The larger statement was, just because something is associated with being feminine, traditionally feminine, does not mean that it is worthless.
Yeah.
Which seems obvious to say out loud, but it's kind of part of the thesis of this movie.
Exactly. That's why it boggles my mind how it's like, it could be considered like a bad script. I'm not saying it's perfect.
Yeah. Oh my God, dude.
I'm not saying it's perfect because obviously we've already mentioned that there are moments and it's like, but it's not as cringy to watch as like She's All That was. Like, that's a bad script.
Oh yeah, dude.
You know?
There's, the kissing booth.
Oh, the kissing booth is a bad script. And I'm not saying those
Little
people
Italy.
Are, yeah. I'm not saying those people are like,
the royal treatment.
But, like, that's a bad...
Sorry, I'm just naming scripts that are worse now. Well,
that's a... Those are bad scripts. Like, this... I actually... Like, this helped change... This helped target, like, my internalized misogyny and go, oh, yeah. Why am I thinking of things like that? You know?
Yeah.
What was the point?
And can I also say...
Yeah?
Well, the thing that I was going to say to that point is that this isn't, like... I just think that, I don't know if I'm overestimating it, but I think that the physical comedy in this movie is really, really lands.
Like, so good.
I was trying to think of, right? There's so many moments that I was watching them and I was trying to think, what does this remind me of? What does this remind me of? It reminds me of a Muppet movie. Because there were so many physical comedy gags that they did. Like, for example, I wrote it down here. There's one part where Gracie and what is the male FBI agent, her love interest's name?
His actor name is Benjamin Bratt.
Yes.
And then the character's name is... What is the character's name?
It's some FBI man.
I'm hearing her say it, but why can't I... It's like muffled. We have to look it up. Hold on.
Okay.
Oh, Eric Matthews.
This is very accurate. Just...
Awick. Widow Awick. Right. Oh, how could I forget that? Widow Awick is scared.
She's literally doing like a judo fight with Eric at one point.
I want to talk about that scene.
He is like, yeah, he's got some kind of, he's got this top, he's on top of her, he's pinned her down, and then you just see a disembodied leg come out of nowhere and just hook him around the neck and yeet him off to the side. Like, that is so funny to me. There was one moment where Candace Bergen, Miss Morningside, stands up out of her chair as she's having this kind of preachy moment.
Oh, yeah.
And she stands up to her full height, and right behind her, perfectly, perfectly superimposed behind her, is a poster of a former Miss USA contestant wearing a crown. It looks as if she is wearing the crown. So, like, that's quite, that was, like, very, they didn't need to do that, but they did. And that was really funny. And then another moment that I thought was funny was when right before, like, when Gracie has figured out what the note means,
yeah,
she is running to go tell Eric.
Yeah.
And she is running between the cubicles like an absolute goblin. You just see her zoom between the cubicles, and then she comes back because she overshot because she was so excited running. Like, stuff like that is, like, that is something you would see in a Muppet movie. Like, that's so funny to me. I don't know. These are things that you didn't have to add, but adding them gave it so much more character.
Yeah. And so enjoyable. I want to talk about the sparring scene between her and Eric.
Hit me.
Because I love this scene. I love this scene because it was just like, mm-hmm, the way you described her as being like this Rambo like character, which is very funny. The way that she's absolutely like kicking his ass, and like he's not holding back either, which is really nice, and I really appreciate. Mm-hmm. And it's not, it didn't like sexualize the scene at all, you know? It's not like when he pinned her to the mat, he like looked at her and they're like gazing and they have a moment where he's like, whoa, I'm on top of you. And you know what normally happens when a dude is on top of a lady? Sex.
Intercourse.
But it wasn't...
He does slap her ass at one point, though.
He slaps her ass at the end. He does
fully slap her
ass.
Yeah,
he slaps her ass at the end, like, after he...
More of a football ass slap, though.
It's like a sports slap, yeah, you know? And, like, he's done that multiple times already, like, in the thing. So it's just, like, you can see how, like, buddy-buddy they are. And...
Mm-hmm.
That's what I mean.
Workplace sexual harassment, the movie. Body dysmorphia, the movie. That's what the first half of this movie is.
Yeah.
You could take either of those titles.
Yeah. You could. Do I like it? Yes.
Will I keep watching it again and again?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Abso-frickin-lutely. Yeah, no, I just really like that scene because she's not holding back. He's not holding back. It wasn't, like, sexualized. He slaps her ass at the end, but it was, like, a sports kind of slap where it's just, like, buddy. You know, you slap your buddy's ass.
Good fight, bro.
Yeah.
Look, some Foley work here.
Yeah.
Wait, how about this?
You say some Foley work?
Make a realistic ass slap noise.
There, the second one.
Can't do it right now.
Second one was good.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. Sample that. Cut. Roll it.
What are your thoughts about that scene? Did I express them all? Are you good?
Let me just say, I liked it.
Okay. Good.
I'm a red-blooded woman. I liked it.
Mm-hmm. That's all we have to say.
There may or may not have been a moment of sexual awakening upon watching this movie for the first time at the age of maybe 13, 14,
agreed,
whatever.
We'll agree with you.
Perhaps.
1,000%. That's what I mean. It was very much like female gazing in the sense of it wasn't like inherently sexual, but it was just like the act of it was something close and you were like, hello?
Mm-hmm. Well, the bit that really got me was the chocolate bar scene.
Oh, when he's...
He does.
When she's trying to flirt with him.
When we did While You Were Sleeping, we talked about the lean scene. The scene where her love interest leaned over her and got in real close and was in her area and just gazing, and that was enough to just put her over the edge. It was the same thing in this one. She's mocking him. She goes, oh, you think I'm pretty? How does it go?
You think I'm pretty.
You want to kiss me. You want to marry me. Classic.
The way that's like in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I say that to my boyfriend all the time.
I say that to mine.
You want to kiss me. You think I'm pretty. Guys, you have to roll your shoulders
you
when
have
I say
to.
It, okay? It's part of the delivery. But I liked it. I liked that scene.
And then when he's like leaning in close, and then you think it's gonna be a moment? Because he's so...
Yeah.
He's so, like, tanned and tall and leaning. Checks and all leaning. The boxes. And then he just pulls out an open chocolate bar and just eats it in front of her like a savage. Because she's not eating anything. She's eating celery.
Yeah.
Poor Gracie.
Woof.
Poor Gracie. And she's just like, what I like about that scene also is that, but when he was leaning, she was like, oh, oh no, my like bluff. He called it because she had a little panic in her eyes.
I like that trope a lot, actually.
Yeah, I love that. It looked like he was going to kiss her and call her bluff. And then she got a little scared in that moment. And then he pulled out the chocolate bar. And I think she was aroused, scared, and upset. Because, and hungry.
My three main emotions.
Yeah, and hungry.
My four main emotions.
Yeah, no, that was a really good scene.
I have a few things that I want to talk about. Because we obviously can't, like, talk about every fucking detail of this movie, even though I would love to do Miss Congeniality, the pageant, the podcast. Just talk about
the pageant, the podcast, the musical. But, the musical, yeah. Molly?
The music.
Cut that out.
Oh my god. We can get Ben Platt.
Ben Platt.
He can be the guy who is a stagehand.
Yeah.
In the scene where Miss she opens Morningside's up the son. Yes, perfect.
Creepy, pervy son.
Although, really, we shouldn't have her son looking older than her, so that might need a revision. Okay, so, speaking of old men.
Yes.
Michael Caine.
Yeah, Michael Caine. Amazing.
Amazing. Love this guy. Smashed it. He doesn't even really need to try too hard. No. What I love about his performance is that they always seem effortless. Yeah. I think his character is very funny.
So funny.
And honestly, I wish there was more of him in the movie because I feel like they didn't use him to his full potential. Like, he was just... I don't know. I feel like... I'm not really sure how they would have done it, but perhaps if they... Maybe they could have cut something else to make more time for him on screen. But this is a good example of a makeover montage.
Oh!
Good example, because she looks very different afterwards.
Oh my god. That makeover montage, one, okay, I understand that, like, the body dysmorphia thing and them just telling her all the time, like, one of his lines is, eyebrows, there should be two. And, like, there doesn't have to be two, but it's such a very, like, in this world, we understand, there doesn't have to be two, but it's such a funny line.
It's very funny.
Especially though, the way that he delivers it is just so, like, eyebrows. Yeah. There should be two.
Revolutionary.
Evolutionary.
I was once the most coveted pageant consultant
and
in the USA. In the contiguous United States of America. And here I am now, sitting across from a buffalo, chewing steak with her mouth open. Absolutely horrifying. But seriously, if he was sitting there going, I have my work cut out for me. I can't do this. Look at this piece of garbage goblin you've put in front of me. If you cannot make over this woman who is obviously conventionally attractive, but just with frizzy hair, perhaps you're not worth your weight in salt, Michael Caine.
Yeah.
His character. You know? They didn't even put glasses on her. You know the whole thing where it's like in a rom-com, they'll be like, oh my god, what a nerd. She's got paint on her clothes and glasses. But then in this one, they just made her hair frizzy and didn't have her in a skin-tight dress. And then everyone was like, ugh, uggo.
Literally her hair was barely contained in a ponytail. She's wearing a suit three times her size and like wearing manly shoes. And they're just like, Gracie in a bikini? I like though that I'm pretty sure that he saw, like, Michael Caine saw the potential. What was his name? What was his character's name?
Let me look it up.
No, I have it here. It's available. Michael Caine. Oh, Victor. Victor Melling.
Melling.
I like that he was critical of, like, her behavior, because when she is eating steak across from him, like, her shoulders are hunched like this and her mouth is real open.
That was pretty awful.
Yeah. And she's so much ketchup in her steak. One of my favorite scenes is when he's after the restaurant scene is when he's teaching her how to glide.
Glide, yes.
They're crossing the street and she's gliding and she's, like, trying very hard to glide and she just looks like she's holding in a poo. And then they did the classic scene of a taxi almost hitting her, And instead of saying the famous line, which is what, Molly?
Hey, I'm walking here.
Yeah. She slams the car hood and goes, I'm gliding here. I found that amazing. Just so funny. Just the way that she
says
it.
It's a reference.
But
it's a film reference. It's a historical film reference. Oh my god. I don't know why I turned into a little Linda Belcher.
I was gonna say, you sound like Linda Belcher.
Maybe it's because I'm drinking my fun juice. Mommy's not drunk, kids. She's just having fun.
Having been only watching Bob's Burgers for the last 2 weeks, that it was very accurate.
Thank you.
No problem.
I will go on a binge. I'll watch the entire thing, like, over and over again.
Yeah.
There's so many good moments.
There are 11 seasons.
This is... Bob's Burgers is one of the shows that will have me cackling every episode. Yeah. Like, there's not one episode where I'm like, huh, it's okay.
Yeah.
Literally, there's a moment in every episode that has me...
So funny.
Like, my cheeks hurt.
Yeah. There's a movie coming out this year.
I know. I'm so excited. Should we go see it together?
Yes.
Come to you. I've been looking for a reason to come to
yay. Toronto. Bring your son.
Oh, you want me to bring the boy?
Bring the boy.
I'll bring the baby. Boy. Oh, man. He's getting better in the car. I'm talking about a dog, by the way. Everyone might be confused.
Ew, a human baby?
He's getting in the car. He doesn't whine constantly anymore, but the longest drive I've ever taken him on was the first day I got him. It was a 2-hour drive.
Mm.
And ever since then, the longest drive has been like 20 minutes, so I'm not really sure how he would handle a long drive. But he's fully vaccinated, so he can get out on the sides of the roads now and not to worry about like coyote poop giving him Bordetella or anything, which is good.
Yeah. Bordetella sounds like pasta.
Bordetella is a kennel cough. It's an upper respiratory infection.
Aww. Okay, so about the...
Right, the movie.
The makeover scene is very funny because it's an entire, like, airplane hangar full of people working overnight to make this one lady look presentable for Miss United States. One single human lady. Yeah. And... something that I found very funny that I wrote down in a separate notebook, because I find that a funny joke, is, you know how people say it takes a village to raise a baby? Mm-hmm. It also takes a village to make a human woman look, quote unquote, human. Think about your, I was going to say anesthesiologist.
Wax. Oh, well, why not? If you're going in for a wax, yeah. Might as well get numbed up too.
Exactly. Your
anesthesiologist. Okay, so your waxer,
your nail
person,
your hairdresser. Hair. Yep.
Dresser.
Your dermatologist, or what's the other word? Esthetician? Why am I saying that weird?
Esthetician,
yep.
Mm-hmm. The lady who works front cash at the tanning salon. If you're like me and negative melanin.
If you get spray tans,
mm-hmm.
You gotta get a girl for that. If you mm-hmm. get massages, that's a person. If mm-hmm. you do your eyelashes or your
also,
eyebrows.
The person who's waxing, yes. The person who's waxing your eyebrows is not the same person who's waxing your legs or vagina.
Exactly.
So that's two different people.
That's
right
two
there.
Different people.
If you can find one person to do it all, I would say.
Let me meet this woman.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Jack of all trades.
Yeah. Exactly. Because I don't go to the same fucking lady for who waxes my body versus my face.
Yeah.
No.
And then all the stuff you're doing yourself, too. Styling your hair. Yeah. Putting on your makeup. Whitening your teeth.
Exactly.
Moisturizing. Exfoliating.
Exactly.
Like all of the your skincare routine that you do every night and every morning. Who's gonna do that? Someone to come do that for you? No, you're gonna do it. You're a jack of all trades.
That's why I find that scene very funny, because like as kids you were like, that's silly. He doesn't take 300 mm-hmm. people to make that one lady look pretty. Guess what, kids? It does.
Yeah. Mayhap it does.
Yeah.
Especially if she's getting her nails on her fingers and her toes done at the same time. That's two people. Shit.
Yeah.
Anyways, I was thinking about that too. I was listening to the things he was like prescribing her to get done. And I was like, okay, some of those make sense. Some don't. At one point you see a woman walk by in the background holding like a blonde wig. And I was like, what is homegirl doing? She's just walking by. They didn't even give her a brunette wig to match the hair of the woman getting made over.
They
just gave her a blonde wig and said, walk with it.
Maybe.
just roll with it.
Maybe they like
improv.
I like the idea that they were contemplating dyeing her hair to just see what she would look like, the her best possible version. So like Victor would go all out because the FBI is paying for this, right? So he's like,
I love also the premise that the FBI is paying.
I love the joke that they made, that she makes later about like 50 federally sanctioned manicurists did this. Mm-hmm. That's very funny.
Let's talk about the finale.
Oh, I was gonna say, before we go there, can we talk about, do you want to talk about her dress that she emerges in?
The purple mini.
The purple mini bodycon dress before bodycons were even a thing. Who, Kim Kardashian.
It's very Aleia. It's very like,
yeah.
Right, with the matching shoes too. She did the monochrome look. And I was like, ooh, bitch. On Instagram today, that would pop off. Like, literally, what a gorgeous look. And would I wear it? Yes.
Yes. Can you?
And did I love it then? Yes. And was it formative to my aesthetic? Yes.
Yes.
And also, in retrospect, the outfit she wears of, like, you know the one outfit that they all wear the same outfit when they're doing their choreographed dance and they're all dressed as the Statue of Liberty? I underestimated how hot fire that outfit was when I was younger, and now that I'm looking, I'm watching it again, and I see that they had the little, they had the little tinsel extensions in their hair. They like they had the little glitter on their collarbones and the green kind of dress, and it was all the surplus on the front. I was like, this is a gorgeous. Buy it all.
Yeah.
I want it all.
Yeah.
I was looking at it, going, can I put tinsel extensions in my hair?
You can.
What is an appropriate time for me to do it?
I mean, with Euphoria being at the forefront of all our culture nowadays, it's like, go to the grocery store.
I knew Euphoria was gonna come up today. Somehow I just knew it.
Just like, wear tinsel to the grocery store, you know? But
okay, we'll do. I'll report back.
I think of all of the montage scenes that we've seen so far, I think this one had the best montage in general, and also the best reveal, because the way that all of those fucking people walked out of that airplane hangar, and you see Victor with his coat on his little finger over his shoulder with sunglasses.
Hooked.
Yeah.
Over the shoulder.
And they're all slow motion walking, and then they all just part. And then you just see her, and like, bro, no fucking wonder Eric Matthews just lost his shit and became instantly in love with her.
Heart boner.
Yeah.
Immediately.
A heart on.
You are such, you're a comedic genius.
Oh, thank you.
That was the best joke. Should do stand up.
But yeah, biggest payoff.
Guys, everyone, if you hear this, comment, leave us a comment that says, Kat, should you stand up? We're trying to pressure her into it. Peer pressure.
I feel like another moment also of sexual awakening was that scene. Because, like, I looked at that. I looked at her and I was like, wow, ladies are pretty. You know what I mean?
You had a wooga heart.
I literally had a wooga, and like, I've only ever looked at men really that way, but it's just like, sometimes you see ladies and you're like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And Sandy Bullock is the one.
She's
high beauty, but also the girl next door at the same time. Shh. That's why her characters are always called Gracie, Annie, or Lucy. It's true. She's in so many movies called Lucy and Annie.
She is.
But I was looking at her entire filmography earlier today, and Lucy and Annie both popped up multiple times.
Lucy, Annie, Frankie.
Have you seen the trailer for her new movie? Oh my god, have you seen the trailer for her new movie?
With Channing Tatum?
Lost City? Lost... Literally, this is everything up your alley. This is a movie that you would
recommend. Oh yeah, Daniel Radcliffe is in it, isn't he?
Is a romance author.
Daniel Radcliffe
is the bad guy! I can't wait to see this movie!
I'm so excited.
We should go see it together.
Okay.
I'm going to come to Toronto when the movie comes out so we can go see it.
You should just keep coming to Toronto anytime a movie we want to see together comes out.
Oops. Oh no, I'm in Toronto again. Oops. Okay, we should probably wrap this up.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the finale, because there's so many things I want to talk about in the finale. Just as a bit of a context, Sandra Bullock and the other FBI agents who have stuck around after she has been officially taken off the case, but she stuck around because she still thought there was still a threat, so she put her career at risk for this. Those FBI agents and her have figured out that there's a bomb somewhere on stage during the finale of the Miss USA...
Just her and Eric.
Miss United States.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's just the two of them.
Yeah, just the two of them, because nobody else believes them.
Eric came through because he failed her. Every man in this movie sucks so much.
Oh, my
much
God. We didn't even get into
that. 2/3 of the movie, and they redeemed themselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so anyway, in the finale, they're all on stage. Sandra Bullock has identified that the bomb is the crown.
Yeah.
So when the crown gets awarded to Miss Rhode Island, who was one of her dear friends during the course of the contest, she runs up and takes the crown off her head, and they fight over it because Miss Rhode Island has no idea why her dear friend Gracie Lee Freebush is trying to take the crown off of her head. And she was like, give it back, and she was hitting her with the bouquet of roses and all of this, that, and the other. All the other contestants are confused. Gracie's fighting them off, trying to get the crown away from them because she knows it's an explosive. This whole scene is a clusterfuck, and it is poetically beautiful because there is Billy Schatz is the MC of the event, and he has this signature song. She's beauty and she's grace. She's Miss United States. Like, everyone knows the song, right? So he's singing the entire song while this is on, all going on. This absolute shit show, this fight. Eric is fighting with Miss Morningside's son up ahead, up above them on the rafters. One of the pageant contestants falls into the crowd.
After Gracie punches her. Because she tries to pull Gracie.
Punches her out of the way.
Oh, my God.
It's a whole mess. The bodyguards, Gracie lays out a bunch of bodyguards. They can't. She just knocks them out. They're trying to take her off stage because she's causing a ruckus. All this is happening, and William Shatner is still singing. She's beauty and she's grace.
But, not even singing with his full heart. Like, he's fully aghast, just kind of speaking through the song, which is even funnier.
And Miss Rhode Island is crying.
Weeping.
She's sobbing. Gracie is trying to figure out what to do. She throws the crown into the air as it explodes, saving everybody. But it, causes the set to catch on fire on the stage. And still Billy Schatz finishes his song. And then it cuts to the, what do they call it? TV Village? Or
the control room
is for the live broadcast. Yeah, it cuts to the control room for the live broadcast. And you see some guy. They're all standing there with their mouths hanging open, watching this thing unfold in front of them. And the one guy who's in charge goes, okay, good show, everyone. They fucking rap. I could not. That line is so understated. I feel like that's one of the best lines of the movie.
It's so good.
And everyone's just like, everyone is agape. Oh my God, so funny. I love that. I love that scene, and then I love the poetic justice.
Yes.
In the last scene, where Gracie is arresting Miss Morningside. And she's putting her in the back of a cop car. And Miss Morningside's giving her lip.
Yep.
And she's like, you just watch. I'm gonna be out of here in no time. And I'm gonna be back at it running my beauty pageant. And then Gracie goes, it's not a beauty pageant. It's a scholarship fund. And Miss Morningside goes, yeah, yeah, yeah. Gracie goes, it's yes. And I was like, she gives her this look, like the two eyes emoji, oh, how dare you turn my own line back around on me? Because the entire movie, Gracie would be like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Everyone around her is like, it's yes, and chew with your mouth closed. And she was like, whatever. So the end, she flips it around at the end, and I was like, poetic justice, poetic
so
justice.
So good.
Anyways, that was a great moment.
Very good. I realized that we spent so much time talking about other things. I want to go a speed round on my favorite things, some of my favorite moments in this movie. One, they're like paint, their paint party club thing that they go to when Gracie's like,
oh,
let's do girl talk. And then she lures all the girls with pizza, which I found a very funny scene where she lures all the girls with pizza, and just the way that they're treating a slice of pizza is so funny. And they're just like, oh, don't do it.
They're smelling it.
And they're just like, I just need a little smell. Yeah. And then she brings them to the paint party where they're like painting on drums and there's glow in the dark paint. It's amazing. I've always wanted to do that. And then we didn't even talk about their answers.
Oh, my favorite line during that scene.
Yeah.
When she, the iconic line, I wanted to buy, I stole a pair of red underwear from the mall. My mom wouldn't let me buy them. She said they were Satan's panties. The words Satan's panties were burned into my brain after watching that movie for the first time for like 3 years. Like, you know how when your mind just goes on autopilot and it just says random words? Those random words were always Satan's panties.
Yeah. I think that if I had continued with my guitar lessons and I actually learned how to play guitar and I became like a rock and roll girl, I would have named my
a rock chick like Avril Lavigne.
Yeah, if I had really put my whole butt into being Avril Lavigne, I would have named my all-girl rock band Satan's Panties.
That should be our production company.
I agree. You heard it here first, folks.
TM, patent pending.
My Catholic parents would be very upset.
My Catholic parents would find it amusing, I think.
Yes, they would.
There's two types of Catholic parents.
White and not white.
Disapprovers and jokers. Oh, okay. You were going to say their answers, the answers during the pageant, the question section?
So sweet little, what's her name? Rhode Island's name?
Rhode Island.
Yeah.
Cynthia or something.
Okay, yeah. Rhode Island's answer to what's a perfect date? And she answers
iconic
April 25th because it's not too hot.
It's not too hot.
It's not too cold.
It's not too cold.
All you need is a light jacket.
All you need is a light jacket.
Which is, she's not wrong.
She ain't.
She ain't wrong. But then they meant like, what's your perfect date? Like with a man? Like, ugh. Ask me something else.
I wish you guys could have seen the face that Kat just made.
Okay, so there's that scene. There's the paint scene. I think the scene where like the FBI was like, okay, we're done here. They caught the copycat of the guy who was bombing whatever. Mm-hmm. When they caught him, they were like, okay, well, case closed. We're leaving. And Gracie's boss is just such a dick and doesn't hear anything that she's saying, which also really annoyed me because it's like, she's not like she's bad at her job. She clearly is good at her job. She made one kind of mistake, which wasn't even a mistake. I would have done the same thing of like saving the mobster guy instead of letting him choke and die on a peanut and like getting him, like charging him.
I mean, if anyone made a mistake in that scene, it was Eric for bringing a long-range automatic weapon into a short, you know, into a close-quarters fight. Yeah. But that's just my opinion.
Yeah, and the guy who got himself shot by, like, stepping one way and not checking his, like, left side, you know? Who's he pointing at?
Yeah.
Use your eyes.
Stupid eyes.
So, Gracie's boss is just like, no, you made a mistake and you're on desk duty and blah, 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 blah. And it just felt like, I think that was the worst. Yeah, that was the worst part about the script. Like, there wasn't enough to validate that she had really made a mistake for me. I feel like it was just like, she needs to prove herself. So everyone is just like beating her down on something that's kind of like a technicality, you know? Another scene. Okay, so we love the small moments where you can see the characters falling for each other. The one that they don't have many, Gracie and Eric, they don't have many, but they have the one where she kind of calls it quits and gives up and she's like, I can't do this anymore. No one's letting me eat a single donut. I'm tired. I don't get any sleep. I can't even hold any of my guns. So she goes to see Eric, who's doing laps in the pool, because obviously that's how you keep your physique
because
like
the
that.
Female gets.
Yes. Thank you. He's doing laps at the pool. She throws a football at him. She throws a football at him while he's in the water. And she's like, I just want
to... Very funny. Hit bonk right on the head.
By the way, I quit. That's all I wanted to say. Goodbye. And he's like, no, 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 no.
Peace. Sayonara.
And bye. So she's kind of like freaking out. And she's sitting on like one of those poolside lawn chairs. And he's at the edge of the pool. And just very intently listening to her. And that's like while she's talking about all of her insecurities and just how she's feeling and stuff. And she's obviously stressed and she needed her like work friend to talk her out of it. And he's actually listening to her. And then he says the very nice thing of he's like something along the lines of if you just let them see that you're like this actually like funny, nice, smart person or whatever, they're gonna love you the way that I do. Something along those lines. I really butchered it, but it's something like that. And it's what gets her to like change because she's like, oh, someone does believe in me. Because everyone is shitting on her all the time. Because like Victor was just shitting on her. Her boss was shitting on her. And Eric is the only one.
Morningside.
Yeah, Morningside is shitting on her. So she was just like, what am I doing this for? And then Eric was the first, was the only one to kind of be like, no, like, oh, because she was saying that the only reason why she's going undercover is because she was the only girl who wasn't pregnant or dead in their office. And he's like, no, that's the reason I gave the boss, but like actually you're smart and capable and all of these things. It's just you have to let people see that. And it was her first kind of like
he co-signed
on her. And I think and she needed that little extra boost of confidence to then stick to her guns later. And so I found that really nice.
Those moments are so nice. They're little valuable moments in a plot, in a script.
I did write it down. I'm so sorry. He says, if they only got to see you the way that I do, they're gonna love you. How nice is that?
Oh my god, I'm so simple yet so... Wow.
Yeah. And then underneath I also wrote Satan's panties.
Was that directly lifted from Darcy's proposal to Elizabeth Bennet?
Oh my god, it would make sense.
Yes, you're poor and your family sucks, but if they could only see you like I see you, darling, they'd be like down.
I'm gonna cut out of so much of what I said and just stick to the line, but it was a few moments of them actually being intimate and
uncut jobs.
It was very few moments of their actual romance, but I think that was like a major one. Even more so than the chocolate bar.
Because it's this particular moment you're discussing has the added layer of it being like a moment of emotional vulnerability as opposed to a moment of just being horny.
That's it for me. Anything else for you?
I want to only mention one more moment.
Yes, do it.
Which was my favorite joke in the movie.
Favorite?
Which was... when she is sitting in the introductory brunch with all the contestants and they're all around tables and they've got food on the table around them.
Yep.
And she gets a little bit of feedback in her earpiece and it like buzzes in her ear and she goes, oh my god. Everyone's attention in the room circles around to her and she just goes, oh my god, no, I said oh my god because I forgot to pray before eating my bagel. And then she gets down and starts praying and the girls at all the tables around her just join in, like, with they don't even question it, they just start praying with her. I thought that was so funny.
She's like, sorry, Lord, for biting into my bagel and schmear.
And literally all the girls around her are like, fair enough. Yeah. And they just like join in, they're like, look, we're all in this together.
It's so cute. I love how like
they're
at first, they're like, who is this bitch? Random. And then they just immediately, like, get behind her. Because, like, even though they were a little skeptical of her, they still, like, rallied around her. And that was another moment that I wanted to mention when... Oh, that's why I brought in... Oh, God. My brain. My fucking brain. So, when I was saying...
No. Be nice. Be nice to your brain.
Okay, thank you. When I was saying that, like, the FBI... Oh, case closed and the FBI abandoned her. And they were like, well, if... her boss was like, if you're gonna stay, you're staying as a private civilian, so turn in your badge and turn in your gun.
Great,
right?
I love that trope also.
And then she has to actually
that should be a song. That's a hook right there. Turn in your badge and turn in your gun. Jot that down.
And she actually has to perform in the pageant by herself. And, like, Victor's gone and her whole team is gone and no one is doing her makeup. And she's, like, rushing in and she's like, oh, which one is lipstick? And all the girls.
and they go, oh, honey. And all the girls. Oh, sweetie.
And Rhode Island just has to be like, girls,
just
and
then puts they puts on three different lip glosses
and yeah. they all start doing stuff to her at the same time and they're like rallying around her even though they're competing with each other and I'm like, wow guys, that's feminism.
Yeah. Women uplifting women. Yeah,
lean into that.
Can be a digital print that we can sell. Women uplifting women. It's just gonna be a vagina. What do you think?
I think it'll be like a bunch of ladies holding up a vagina.
Holding a vagina? Yeah. Do you think?
Yeah. Just, oh, I think it would be good. Like that.
People might like. Oh. Like it's a ceremonial canoe and they're just carrying it around. Anyways, what would you give this movie on a personalized rating scale out of 10? 10 somethings.
I would give this movie 9 hairspray cans to the bikini line out of 10. I'd dock off 1 point. For the romance not driving the thing, but that's just
that's just a one of our basic motivating tenets, but it's no big deal. It's one of the things that we apparently run our show by, but it's no big deal.
I
love this show I love this movie so much, like, don't get me wrong, but I have to give it only an, I'm gonna give it 8 exploding crowns out of 10. Mm-hmm. I'm docking 2 points for the workplace sexual harassment and body dysmorphia.
Yes.
Causing scenes.
These are important. I understand. Mm-hmm. I understand.
But like with peace and love, of course.
With peace and love. Yeah. This movie means a lot to me growing up. So I cannot fault it. I can be critical of it. But it's my favorite.
Yeah, me too. I literally just, like, when we recorded the Layered Butter episode, I said this is one of my favorite movies, rom-coms ever. So I don't go back on
no,
that.
No, yeah, just, yeah.
There's a reason why this is the podcast about movies that we love to hate and hate to love. It's because it's mixed emotions, guys.
Come on, guys. Be complex. Not like I hate, I love. Shut up.
Yeah. What about the in-between? Where's the representation?
I wish. I wish we were screen recording just so I could get in. Shut up. And you going, yeah. Molly, where can they find you?
You guys can find me on TikTok and or Instagram at Molly's Outbox.
What?
Kat, how about you?
You can find me on anything at It's Catherine Ram.
You can find VomCom on Instagram and TikTok at VomCom Podcast. You can also follow us if you want and, like, you know, download our episodes. Give us a nice rating if you want anywhere you get your podcasts, which, you know, I assume you already know because you're literally listening to this right now. So I'm going to give you guys some credit there.
Write us a comment.
just go into the comments and just write just points for the most creative spelling of the phrase uncut gems.
Yes. Yes, please. And Josh Safdie, we are available to be your muses. Okay. We got a lot to be mused about.
But not if you're going to write movies that are as stressful as Uncut Gems. I need Uncut Gems.
Uncut Gems.
Like, Josh Safdie, if you need a muse for like a rom-com.
We're here.
I could be your jam.
And I will be your Unca. Bye.
Take it easy.
It got real chaotic at the end there.
Yeah.
I am fond of you, you know.
And a girl?
I often wish you weren't such a stinker.